Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by you guys. I am going to answer your guys' questions here in a bit, but it is Sunday night following the most fun All-Star game since, like the early 2000s when Allen Iverson won MVP on some crazy Eastern Conference comeback. This was, look, Pete and I hopped on here and mocked the new format for a solid 10 minutes, I would say. He's not here to eat the crow, but I hope wherever he is eating his crow, that he put some pineapple on top of it. I'll have to ask him about how that tasted as a combination. But, you know, from my standpoint, and I did grant, like, while we were talking about it, why the NBA was trying to do what they were trying to do. And it just so happens that all the things that they were trying to do, they were able to accomplish. They wanted to bring charity into the fold here for obvious reasons. You know, anytime you can help people who need it, then that's good. And then it also gets the guys interested in winning money for charity, because that's something that they want to be able to do. Having the each quarter mean something individually was a good idea, because, you know, it makes it more likely that you get at least one fun finish. And then, you know, the last quarter, playing to a specific point spot, in this case it was 157, was really, really fun. I mean, Jen and I were just glued to the TV, so much so that our poor daughter was in her bedroom just kind of whining, and we had to wait for commercial breaks because we don't have DVR out here right now. We're just kind of relying on the internet, and so we couldn't, like, pause. We just hoped that Avery wasn't in too big of trouble, and then ran back there whenever we could during commercial breaks or timeouts and stuff like that. I never thought that we would reach a point watching the NBA All-Star game that would be the case, where we were so glued to the TV that we literally couldn't break ourselves away from it. So shouts to the commissioner and shouts to the people behind this format. And, you know, I think they could have done a better job describing it or explaining it. And then I also think there are a couple tweaks I would still make. I would like for them to get rid of that trophy that looks like a Forbes 500 Employee of the Month award. I wish they would tweak it and have it be Kobe catching that lob from KG in both of their first All-Star games. That'd be ideal. And then for the fourth quarter of overtime, don't count team fouls. I think that's that, just because I want to avoid free throws as much as possible in a game where you are literally limited to a certain number of points that you can score. So making as few of those points be free throws as possible should be a priority. But other than that, it was so much of that game was just so fascinating. And you know, there was the basketball itself, where you had, you know, seven of the best 10 players in the world all out there playing their asses off, right? Because KD wasn't out there, Steph wasn't out there, Klay Thompson wasn't out there. But you still had, you know, so many guys just absolutely killing themselves on both ends of the court to try to win that game. That was fascinating. And then, you know, kind of remove yourself from the basketball, and if you have a chance to go back and rewatch it, watch those guys interacting during timeouts and stuff. Poor Vogel and Nurse were just completely in over their heads. They just had to sit back and just say, all right, well, we're just going to let LeBron and Chris Paul handle this huddle. And you know, let those guys really go at it. That was fascinating. That was so cool to watch. And then, you know, you saw Kyle Lowry out there flopping around. I'm okay with having him removed from all future All-Star games. But, you know, while that was going on, you kind of even saw the looks that everybody else on the court was giving him. Like, come on. Like, it felt like a pickup game. Like, if you've ever wondered, hey, what would it be like to watch a high-stakes pickup game between all of the best players in the NBA. We got to see it. That was so much fun. And it was great because you had those pickup game rules where the game got a little bit more physical. Like I said about Lowry, when he was taking those charges, you saw everybody just kind of like, come on, man, what the fuck? You know, it was great. It was just tremendous, tremendous entertainment. It's a bummer that it ended on free throws. I would like to, you know, kind of institute some kind of rule that would say, like, all right, if you hit the game-winning point on a free throw, the other team now gets a rebuttal shot to be able to tie the game or whatever and then continue playing until the last basket is scored on anything other than a free throw. But overall, just a really, really fun All-Star game. And, you know, really, really fun All-Star weekend. It was wild to watch in the three-point contest. It was funny to look up and see needs to hit 26 to avoid elimination, I believe, in like the first round. That was incredible to watch. They also added the double money attempt, right, where it was from even further behind the line. That was cool to see. That was a nice addition as well. You had the slam dunk contest, which went into double overtime and probably should have gone into like triple overtime. They those two guys would probably still be dunking if not for Dwayne Wade for some reason giving Aaron Gordon less than a 50 after jumping over a 7'6" human being. But just a really, really fun All-Star weekend, and, you know, the NBA kind of dedicated this to Kobe, and, you know, at every dead ball, when we weren't tending to our screaming daughter, Jen and I found ourselves just saying, like, man, that would have been so cool to see Kobe playing in that setting. He would have loved that setting, seeing guys really work their ass off the way that they were competing out there. He would have absolutely loved it. And you know, it's a bummer we never got to see that, but yeah, if there is something to kind of walk away from Kobe's passing and stuff with, it was, you know, the amount of respect that Kobe has gotten and the way that the entire NBA honored him, not just with, you know, the shoes and the jackets and all of the various other ways that they were paying him respect, but the ultimate way to pay Kobe respect was the way that those guys competed in the All-Star game. I think I know that he's up there somewhere just smiling down on what we all got to watch last night. Let's take a quick second here. When we come back, I am going to answer you guys' questions. Today's show is brought to you in part by the Arizona Board of Tourism. Spring training is just about underway. All the teams have finally reported out there, and they're all getting ready to finally get after it. It's been really cool to see, you know, like guys like Cody Bellinger really rip the Astros for not just the cheating, but their cowardice following that cheating and now trying to play victim after the fact. And watching the entire league kind of go at the Astros this year is going to be a lot of fun, and it's going to start out there in Arizona. So make sure you guys get out there and check out all the baseball for the Cactus League itself. If you weren't into baseball, like I've been saying, just incredible golf, incredible food, hiking, biking, hot air balloons, whatever you might be looking for, I guarantee you Arizona has you covered during the absolute best time of year to be out there. So head on over to visitarizona.com/springtraining. Again, that's visitarizona.com/springtraining to start planning your trip today. All right, we're back, and I couldn't help but over the break recognize the number of people talking about how crazy it would have been to see LeBron, AD, and Kawhi all on the same team, given the way that they played defense there in that fourth quarter. They had to outscore Team Giannis by 9, and were just, everybody was just flying around out there. It was pretty incredible to watch, and it's a bummer we aren't going to get to see it. But anywho, let's go ahead and throw to your guys' questions. The first couple questions here are asking about J.R. Smith and whether he makes sense for the Lakers. Look, he worked out for them. We're probably going to get some news about that tomorrow or today by the time you guys are listening to this. So, you know, that's something to keep an eye out for. I'm fine with it. He can shoot. He's not really afraid of the moment. He's bigger than, you know, say, Troy Daniels. So if the Lakers want a little bit more length while also being able to provide some spacing out there, then that he makes some sense in that regard, too. It's just a matter of whether he has kept himself in basketball shape during his absence and whether he's still interested in throwing soup at assistant coaches. I kid about that stuff, but by all accounts, he, you know, everybody who was out there in Cleveland and covered him really, really liked him. And he seemed to those guys like a really good teammate. So I'd be perfectly fine with the addition. Let's go to the next question here. What's up, Anthony and Pete? Listening to the pod a few days after the passing of my, and I'm sure half the sports world's idol, Kobe Bryant, really helped get through it. Just overall hearing positive things and stories on social media I would have never heard before, it was what got me through it. Do you think, I'm glad to hear that, and to the number of people who have said that, I talked with my family and some friends about this in the immediate aftermath of Kobe's passing, and, you know, the number of people who have said that in some small way, Pete and I were able to help. That's, I don't know if I'll ever do anything in this industry that I'll be prouder of. And the fact that we all got through it together makes us a lot stronger collectively. Let's keep going here. So do you think LeBron and AD, I guess Boogie's opinion doesn't really matter at this point, are finally coming to terms that Rondo is not an NBA player anymore because it can't be Rob and Jeannie that are so big on him? I was listening to Shannon Sharp on Undisputed, and he brought up a good point now with Marcus Morris. If the Clippers face the Lakers in the Western Conference, and let's say Bron averages 36 to 40 minutes a game, they can now cover him all of his minutes. Does adding Collison, if he chooses the Lakers, and adding JR put us back on top? Because I'm not going to lie, Clippers, Bucks, and Heat got scarier. Also, what is Pete's Twitter? I've been trying to find him for the longest time and typing Pete Zayas. Thanks for being easy to find, Anthony. I'm shocked at this, but Pete's at Laker Film Room. I'm shocked. I didn't think I would ever get that question asked. But regarding Marcus Morris, I actually think the Clippers made themselves a little worse in trying to just make sure the Lakers didn't get better. That was one of those things where, like, we've all played Monopoly before, and somebody puts, you know, a property on the quote-unquote trading block, or you kind of get into a an auction kind of situation for a property that somebody doesn't want to buy, and you try to drive up the price of that property, and then the other person that you're driving that price up decides to call your bluff and just say, well, fine, you can go ahead and buy the property yourself. And you go like, ah, crap, I didn't need the third purple or the second purple property here on this board, right? And I think that's kind of the situation the Clippers find themselves in here with Marcus Morris. I think they made themselves a little bit worse because Harkless was a better defender and their identity was more from the defensive end of the court. I think Morris helps a little bit in like the general toughness thing, but he's not going to be a part of their best five-man lineups, and I don't know if he's going to be willing to accept not being a part of those lineups. So, in that regard, I was actually somewhat happy to see Morris go to the Clippers, especially, by the way, if they pay him at the end of this year, because I don't want to be the team that pays Marcus Morris next year. In terms of, you know, Collison, that ship has sailed. This was asked before we got that news, so I don't think there's any reason to answer it. And then, you know, regarding how the Clippers might guard LeBron, it's one of those things where the only way that they're going to really truly slow down LeBron is if they put Kawhi on him. And I think eventually they'll go to that in big spots, but you can't do that for seven games of a series. I think eventually Kawhi would just kind of break down. So maybe they go to some combination of Kawhi and Paul George, you know, kind of alternating for stretches, but they still don't really have an answer for Anthony Davis if Davis really goes full God mode. And, you know, we're still waiting for that from Davis in a game against the Clippers, but you know, if he ever does go that way, that's how the Lakers are gonna are going to win this thing out. All right, next question here comes from 2 weeks with pay. Anthony, recently I've seen a lot of writers and fans online wonder why we aren't utilizing the five-man lineup of LeBron, KCP, Danny Green, Kuzma, and AD more. Currently, it has a plus 25.2 net rating, but only in 42 minutes. Do you know or have confidence that Vogel is saving this lineup for the playoffs? I imagine writers have asked him this behind the scenes, still scarred from Luke's refusal to play our best statistical lineups together the last few years. Hope you're enjoying Texas so far. The weather does get better. Sure as hell hope so. We're all sick because of the weather out here. No, overall, Texas has been great. I think we found the house that we're eventually going to buy, too. So pretty crazy that this somehow is going to buy me a house. You guys are the best. Now, regarding that lineup and whether Vogel is saving it for the playoffs, I think we would see more of it if AD wanted to play the five more, because the only way that you can play that lineup is with AD at the five. I don't know if they're necessarily specifically saving it for the playoffs, but I do think we are probably seeing, like, Vogel knows that's in his back pocket. And if they desperately need to go to it, they'll go to it. But I don't think it's one of those, like, we can't give other teams video of this lineup or you know, anything other than anything deeper than, no, I want to see what else we have out there. We know that's going to work. Now, I do think we're probably going to see more of it over the course of the season, because they do have some wrinkles to iron out, and they want to know for sure that it's as good as the small sample size to this point tells us it is. But for right now, I don't think he's necessarily saving it for the playoffs. I think he wants to see what else they have also. It's kind of like a pitcher adding, you know, like Kershaw adding a slider, right? He knew he had the fastball. He knew he had the curveball. Let's tweak, mess with ourselves a little bit here and see if we can add that slider. Anthony and Pete, have you guys noticed how poorly Danny Green shoots from three above the break? I've been surprised by how frequently he misses those shots. I know he is known as a corner specialist, but I expected more from him as a knockdown shooter. Are you guys surprised by this? I think I'm somewhat, I'm not going to say disappointed, but Danny Green hasn't exactly lived up to expectations here. Now, he's coming off an insane season. He wasn't going to replicate that with the Lakers this year. But, you know, there are some spots where, like, Danny Green misses just feel so much heavier because, and I think some of this is why he feels somewhat disappointing, because he does get those opportunities to really break teams' backs. And then when he misses those shots, it feels like a gut punch to you. And I think that's kind of where we're at with Green. I think over the course of the year, he's probably going to progress to the mean all over the court, and eventually you'll see kind of the Danny Green that we hope for, but hoping that we would get another season where he shoots like 40, what did he shoot last year, like 47% from three-point range, that was never going to happen, and expecting it was, you know, kind of set you up for disappointment. Clippers, or so, oh, that last question, by the way, came from KCP's anklet. KCP's played great this year. XXNBAXX writes, I feel like the Clippers got Collison to act like he was going to come out of retirement. It's funny how he wanted to wait until after the deadline so the Lakers couldn't go after a point guard. Soon as the deadline is over, he wants to stay retired. This is Kawhi all over again. Clippers are playing us. I don't think, we can remove the tinfoil hat there. I think it's let's say that is actually what's going on here, right? And the Clippers play the Lakers again. That's a fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me thing, right? That's where the Lakers have to set themselves up better with better intel to understand what else might be going on there. I'm not saying that's actually what's going on, but I'm saying if that crazy hypothetical was actually playing out, then the Lakers could always have protected themselves by just finding better intel from Collison on what he was thinking and where he would possibly end up. In this case, they waited a little too long, and as any A college student will tell you, you procrastinate, you open yourself up for getting bit in the ass, and they got bitten right in the ass. Let's take a quick second here. When we come back, I'm going to finish off with a few more of your questions. All right, question comes from M. Griffith M. They are asking about time zones, and, you know, it came from a place where, you know, I'd mentioned moving and how the time change has been kind of brutal for me. I'm recording this right now at 20 minutes to midnight, and yeah, I'm a little wiped, but overall, I can't really complain. My job is to talk about the Lakers, and you guys don't want to hear that. But the question was if the NBA would ever move, push up Lakers games to be able to be seen on the East Coast, or not Lakers games, but just NBA games on the West Coast. Would they ever move those up so that more people on the West Coast could see them? I think it makes some sense. The problem with that, though, is that, you know, they do still want to at least try to seem like they care about the live viewing audience. Ticket sales are still kind of a big deal. And if you have a game, you know, at even 5:30 or 6, right, that's still starting at 9. And, you know, there are going to be people on the East Coast who don't watch that. And all you did was make it more difficult for people to come from work on a weekday to be able to watch that game on the East Coast. Now, maybe on like a Saturday, you could start games on the West Coast at like 4:30 or 5. And still, you know, that makes a little bit more sense for people on the East Coast. They'd still be staying up a little bit later. That game would still probably end at like 10:30 or 11. But, you know, you can do that kind of a thing on a Saturday night. But you know, overall, if you're moving those games up, it's kind of hard to get it to a spot where people on the East Coast would be able to watch that game without completely screwing over the fans who really care and spent actual money to buy a ticket and then go to the game. And you know, they would get there eventually, but if it's taking all the way till midway through or almost all the way through the first quarter to have everybody in their seats for a game, then that doesn't even look good on TV for the people who are watching on the East Coast anyway. So yeah, it's kind of a tough spot there. I don't think this is really a fixable problem. Question here comes from JRover76. David Fizdale just said today on The Jump that the regular season is too much for a vet like Rondo, but that with having the rest days in between in the playoffs and playing the same team repeatedly, he will figure them out and pick them apart. He didn't say this, but it got me thinking that he knows Doc's system so well from Boston's days, so that could be a nice thing when the Lakers face the Clippers. Remember when he was playing for Chicago and was destroying that Brad Stevens team whose system he knew so well until he got hurt? Shit, does that mean he will get hurt halfway through destroying the Clippers? J. Rover. That was 3 years ago. I think, especially for former coaches and people that were in the league, it's kind of hard to crap on a veteran. But at some point, it's okay to just say, hey, that guy is washed. You could hope for certain oddly specific scenarios and ways that, you know, Rondo could actually improve by way of the situation around him. But I think if you are the Lakers and you're relying on that oddly specific hypothetical, then you're setting yourself up for some trouble there. I think personally the Lakers still have to see what they can find on the buyout market. It does kind of seem like they, and I think, you know, I kind of joked on Twitter that I don't know what I'm going to talk about. I do think we're going to get a few rumors on guys that the Lakers are at least going to work out. And even if they don't work anybody out, I do think we're going to start seeing Vogel kind of tweak the rotation a little bit to get a better look at some other guys that they haven't gotten a full look at so far. Hi there, Quinn Cook. And you know, hopefully they don't have to rely so much on the hope of playoff Rajon Rondo. Let's go next question here. Lake, a few underscores, and then show says, have you guys noticed how far back from the line Dwight shoots his free throws? Why do you think he shoots them that way? Thanks. I loved seeing this. I was so happy when I saw I nudged Jen like 37 times. She was all kinds of pissed at me when we saw it, but I was hoping he would do this. A lot of bigs actually do this because the free throw is so close that somebody who is as muscle-bound as Dwight is might actually, like, it might be too close a shot for his current form. He doesn't shoot the ball from way above his head, which would help from with some of his touch. He shoots it more from, you know, below his head. He doesn't fully extend his arms out there, especially on free throws. And so what you wind up having is this really impossible shot or form to try to replicate the way that you have to be a good free throw shooter. I'm sure other people will notice this, but when Dwight shot three-pointers, the form looked fine. You know, it still looks stiff because it's not the kind of shot that he's really accustomed to shooting, but it looked better than, you know, even some of the, I remember at some points of his career, he tried shooting that kind of Tim Duncan bank shot from, you know, just above, you know, the block or something like that. And it always looked hideous. And it was for the same reason that his free throws, he struggled from the line. And it's that it was too close a shot and he didn't have the touch necessary to pull that kind of shot off. He takes a step back and now he can use a few more of his muscles to actually make that free throw or the form that he uses from back there a little bit more replicable. And that's, you know, that's the goal of free throw shooting is can you get into a rhythm where you get into such muscle memory that you can just shoot those things with your eyes closed? And I think that's I think that was a step, you know, ironically backwards, but in the right direction. Let's go one more question here. Lakers Run LA writes, Do you guys think moving Kuzma to the small forward position would help him be more effective? I think his size would be more useful, especially if he did more off-ball cuts to the basket. Also, you guys need to start calling the Clippers by their actual name, LA's B team or the San Diego Clippers, Lakers for life. So with Kuzma, like the position small forward, I think he kind of struggles with. He doesn't have the lateral quickness to guard anybody at the small forward position. That said, if he's playing small forward, that likely means that Anthony Davis is out there and LeBron James is out there and Kuzma has been pushed to the small forward. And because of the players that he's out there with, he's now the third option, and that makes a lot more sense for Kuzma. And that's why you see that you know, three-player combo actually produce really well. It just doesn't have very many minutes. So, yeah, I don't think it's so much that Kuzma needs to play more small forward. It's that Kuzma needs to play more alongside LeBron and alongside Anthony Davis. All right, that'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Thank you very much for tuning in. Thank you guys a ton for all of the questions. I wasn't able to get to all of them, which works out because we have 4 days of show to cover before the Lakers' next game. So I will probably be dipping back into the mailbag. If you guys want your questions covered, send them in the form of a 5-star review. If you guys are Patreon subscribers, if you ask questions or if you subscribe to Patreon and ask me questions there, that guarantees that your question gets answered there as well. That's patreon.com/AnthonyIrwinLA. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.